The reason why case studies do so well, even though it generates a higher cost of a lead, the person who's going through that information is automatically reading through it. They're like, I want this. They're oftentimes consuming a lot of info up front because of the fact that you're just revealing, like, here's the strategy behind it. Here's how I got these results. Here's what I did for this person. Because what they're feeling, it's an emotional thing. They're going, I want this.
This is The Fighting Entrepreneur, the podcast dedicated to entrepreneurs looking to change the world. Learn how to start, build, and scale a business in today's highly competitive business environment. Here's your host, The Fighting Entrepreneur, Anik Singhal.
What's up, you crazy fighting entrepreneurs? Welcome back to another episode of The Fighting Entrepreneur. And today I've got an amazing guest who is not only going to go in the ring with me and do a bunch of rounds, but he's going to give me free consultation for some new things that we're launching at Learn. We're going to talk about how to get a minimum of 20, if not more, qualified applications to your high ticket programs that are sold on the phone, and to do it easily and to do it all using paid ads at a ridiculous ROI. Now, this is our guest. You know, I'll do an introduction for him in a minute, but I mean, he's been doing this for a long time for a lot of people. He's got massive amounts of background in it, and he's going to lay it out for us. Exact funnel strategy, ad strategy, and everything. So you get ready. It's going to be an awesome episode. But before we can get to that, are you a member of Learn? Come on, L-U-R-N. As I'm recording this, we're getting close to surpassing 410,000 people in the platform. Can you believe that's before I've even started advertising to get people in the platform? Because we're still a baby. The platform's still not even out of beta yet. This is the home for entrepreneurs. Not only do we have courses that are free, that are $5, that are maybe a few hundred bucks for a wide range of topics, but we got features coming out that will allow you to connect with entrepreneurs all over the world. We are going to grow this platform to over 10 million users or 10 million entrepreneurs. You want to be a part of it. Trust me, you don't want to see this revolution go right by you. So join. It's free. Go to LURN.com. And secondly, AnikPodcast.com, AnikPodcast.com. Go binge watch our other episodes, and please go to iTunes and leave us a great review. Every week, I look at the end of the week to see who's added a review that week into iTunes, and I give away awesome stuff, including sometimes free calls with me, cash, and other swag. So AnikPodcast.com, go over there, leave us a great review, help us get this podcast out to the rest of the world. Now that we have that out of the way, I want to introduce today someone who's become a good friend of mine and a marketing expert that I got to tell you, I follow. Now, there's very few people I follow. When I say follow, meaning I read all his posts, I look for content that comes from him, and there's just not that many in the industry that I follow like that, right? I've been in the industry for a long time. I feel like I know a lot when it comes to marketing. The first time I ever connected with this individual was from a series of posts that he makes on Facebook called Direct From My Rep. I thought it was catchy, right? Now, I know this person spends a lot of money on Facebook ads and YouTube ads, so when he said rep, I knew what that meant. And there's some amazing stuff. It really feels like you get this behind the scenes, like what's going on at Facebook, the underbelly of Facebook, and you'll get all these tips months in advance. And it's been amazing just reading them. Then, of course, I got to connect with him more as we did the WebinarCon event. And as I started talking to him more on other areas, I find out, okay, he spends $2.5 million a month on advertising. Like, I'm telling you right now, I'm between $500,000 and $600,000 a month. And if I was spending $2.5 million a month right now, I'd be doing like 10 million a month, and that sounds amazing. So I'm really looking forward to learning a lot more from him. Plus, what's funny is he's managed over 400 clients. I personally do not know how he's alive. His clients are a lot of work. We were joking right before we started here, and he just had a baby recently, just 6 months ago. And I said, well, baby's got to be easy after 400 freaking clients, right? So we got a wealth of knowledge. He's been doing this for over 13 years. He's a great guy. He's a straight shooter. He'll get right to the point. You'll see. He just gets right to the meat. So help me welcome our guest today on the podcast, Mr. David Schloss. David, man, thanks so much for being on today.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, we're going to dive right in. You know, David, we don't do a lot of story. We don't do a lot of that stuff. But I do want to go over like a minute of like, who the heck is David? You know, how did you get into this? But just so everyone knows, round one is going to be funnel. Like literally the exact funnel you need if you want to get leads that you can call on the phone and sell what I call super ticket programs, anything above $5,000. We're going to talk about ads. We're going to talk about everything deep into it today. Before we do that, David, we do have a tradition here at The Fighting Entrepreneur. I need you to raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, David Schloss.
I, David Schloss.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
To tell the truth and nothing but the truth.
To tell the truth and nothing but the truth.
And reveal all my lead generation secrets.
And reveal all my lead generation secrets.
Sweet. All right. That's $2.5 million a month and 400 clients worth of lead generation secrets are going to come out. So David, before we go into round one, couple of minutes, man. Who's yep. David Schloss? How did you fall into this? What were you doing before? You've been around for 13 years doing this stuff.
Yep.
Is that what you just like when you don't look like you're that old. You look like a very young person. So is that just what you did when it was time to put your big boy pants on? You just went into advertising?
Yeah. Well, all right. So I'm 31, right? So getting us started 18 wow. in the space was not something I thought I would be diving into. So for the sake of history behind that, I actually was going to go into finance and investment banking. In college. So I went to the University of Florida, and then within the first semester of realizing that this school is way too fun, I slacked off quite a bit, and let's just say my path got derailed. And all it took was a, you know, guidance counselor, whatever you want to call them, at school saying, hey, if you don't get straight A's next semester, you can't be in this specific school anymore.
Wow.
That was enough of a conversation for me to go, well, I know for a fact I'm not going to get straight A's next semester because I didn't do so well the first time around. So I'm going to look into something else. At the same time, that same logic was around the fact that I was barely making any money. I didn't want to get a job working in retail, some restaurant, anything like that while in college because I already had a packed schedule to begin with. So I just went on Google, typed in how to make money online, and went through that rabbit hole for what felt like an entire day. Because I actually don't remember going to school the next day. I just remember continually doing more and more research. And, you know, in 07, a lot of that revolved around paid blogging, PPC through Google, Yahoo, and MSN at the time. You know, people were doing digital product, but it wasn't that prominent. Like not many people knew about how to build digital product. The ones you heard about were big product launches. I know that you did one back then. I remember because I used to follow you for a while back then. I was like, huh, this is interesting. And so I just fell into the world of paid ads and then organic marketing and things of that nature out of necessity. Like I didn't even know what I wanted to do after the fact because someone told me I couldn't do what I wanted to do anymore. Right? I was no longer allowed on that path because I screwed up so bad. And so because of that, I started to look into, you know, social media advertising as it was framed back then because there weren't that many social networks. You know, you had MySpace, Facebook was just opening up its ad platform to the public, and there weren't that many other social platforms with an ad component to it. Twitter didn't come out yet. LinkedIn, nothing. You know, just a lot of these networks weren't thinking about ads. And so I either had to learn ads through Google or Yahoo, or I had to figure out Facebook. And for me, because I was already on Facebook since it was college centric back then, I was like, well, they have an open platform now to the public. Literally the same semester I was there is like, we're open for ads. And I just started digging around in there. And I learned about affiliate marketing and things like that. So of course, back then, you throw up any link you want, you could start promoting it. It didn't matter if it was the raw link from ClickBank or Wealthy Affiliate, and it's an old school name right there, or a bunch of other these networks. And next thing you know, you're just throwing up ads for, you know, $5-$10 a day, getting tens of thousands of impressions for like a penny. And you know, you just learn and figure it out from there. So I did it because I really had no idea what else I was going to do. And it just so happened that I was a numbers person to begin with, having a finance and investment banking background, that to me, playing with charts in advertising was just like playing with charts on the stock market. So it was easy for me to make the correlation.
So it's funny. Did you know that you and I have that in common? So I went to school, I got a degree in finance, and I actually had my Series 6, 23, and 26. I was a financial planner. I had millions of dollars under management. And then senior year, I got offers from JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley and Charles Schwab to be an investment banker. But by my senior year, I was already doing so well online. I was like, I don't want to work for someone else. So it's crazy. I didn't go into advertising though. So I went into affiliate marketing and a lot of SEO and affiliate stuff, but kind of interesting. Yeah. I went to school for finance and wanted to do that and thought that sounds like too much work and it's not fun enough. Awesome stuff. Well, I'm glad you did. And I'm glad that this is the track you went down. So if you're ready, man, I want to dive right into the rounds.
Let's do it.
All right. So round number one, funnels. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here I am. Let's do some background. So we always like to use this and use this as consultation. I have two programs coming out in the company right now at Learn that are going to be what we call super tickets, right? They have to be because the amount of support, the amount of things that we do for the student. One of them is probably going to be a 7, 8, 9,000. And that is my copy incubator, we call it. And it's meant to take people and teach them how to become freelance copywriters of a very specific type of copy and to go out there and get clients that they can do work for. But here's the caveat. We actually get them clients as well. We actually find them clients and bring them right to their doorstep. Limited program. We'll take about 40 people per class maximum. And you know, it's very in-depth, very hands-on, but it's also very specific. So I'm looking for people that are open to the idea of becoming a copywriter. The other program is one that we can definitely add more seats to. We can go a little wider with it. It's more of a community and mentorship for a year, teaching people how to build information-based businesses, how to build what we call expert businesses, right? So they take the knowledge out of their heads and sell it online. And so both of these are programs that are in that $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 price range, sold by speaking on the phone, have to qualify to be a part of. Yeah. And we want to get leads for them. And so when you and I spoke, when we were talking about a topic for this, I thought, man, this is perfect. You'll basically build my entire strategy for me and I don't have to pay you. So that's awesome. So round number one, funnels. Talk me through, now that you know that these are the two programs I want to do, what is a funnel? What does a funnel look like from the moment someone clicks on the ad all the way through till they get on the phone?
So for the things that you're doing that are super ticket, right, or high ticket for other people, there's actually three funnels that we're using right now, and they all sort of hybridize to each other. Here's what I mean by that. So the shortest funnel are people who, let's say, are running direct to a VSL, so a video sales letter, video at the top, copy below. Copy could be results-based, right? You can have some testimonial videos and some imagery along the way. Basically, the entire page is a proof statement of why you do what you do and how great you are in teaching this to other people and their results. But that page alone, you know, most people have an opt-in before you get there. Some of the funnels we're running right now just go straight there. And you'll see why in a moment. I'll explain the other funnels. They all weave together, right? So the one that we're running for a lot of people is straight to VSL. And then the button that they have to click is actually the opt-in, right? So they can't even get to the application until they fill in this box that just says name and email. Once they put name and email, then they're redirected to the application. Some people are testing call booking first or application first. It really depends on how much pre-qualification you got to put in place. And I say that because for some people, they don't want to work with anyone who makes less than 100 grand. Then you want to make sure your application can send them to a page that says, hey, sorry, you're not qualified for this program, versus the ones who do say they have over 100 grand in revenue or whatever, you would send them to the call booking page, right? So there's some conditional logic in place so that you're not just sending all leads through getting everyone on the phone. Some people would prefer to only talk to the highest qualified people, so we make sure to have some logic in there, right? So that's the simplest. I mean, it's basically three pages, right? VSL, application, thank you, right? The other variation of that is essentially you take those three same pages, but you'll put an opt-in, more of like a true opt-in in front of it. So it could be a case study, or maybe you're giving away something that's similar to what you're discussing in the VSL. As an example, if you wanted to give something away like a lead magnet, it might be that your lead magnet is, you know, the five-step process we use to sign up qualified clients. You know, I'm just making this up, right? So they opt in for that lead magnet, but on the VSL, you're like, hey, you're, you know, free download is on its way to the email, but I have something for you below, right? And then that's the VSL, right? You just basically keep them on the page and you have them go through this. Now, of course, in the VSL, if you actually mention like, hey, I know you're looking for your gift, it's on its way, don't worry, but I have to show you something really quick, they don't leave, right? They actually will stay, mm-hmm. right? Because now they know, okay, I don't have to worry about this thing never showing up. It's not a fake out. Something's actually going to show up, but I'll stay here and see what's up. So this is just one extra layer if you want to have more leads come in and not worry so much about delivering just applications. And I say that because with that type of funnel, when you click on the button to go fill out the application, you just go straight to the application, right? You remove that step of just collecting name and email like I mentioned before. You already did that on the first page, right? So you're basically creating the opportunity of going straight to the presentation, or do you want to incentivize them to get something first? I could tell you that the second funnel, cheaper leads, more filtering. Mm-hmm. The first one, less filtering because it's like straight to the point. And if they watch this presentation, they're going to qualify themselves anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind. You're going more off of cost per application versus cost per lead and cost per application, right? Then this one, which I don't see many people doing, is actually a quiz funnel. We actually are using a quiz right now in the annuity space, I'll put it that way, where we are gathering people's information, at least name and email up front, and they're going through like a 5-question quiz. And on that quiz, we're getting certain responses that we want to see before we send them to the presentation about why they should invest in an annuity. And if, so it's a double layer of filtering. Here's the funny thing. Those questions that they answer, there's 3 of them that if they get specific answers right, we send them to one VSL. If they answer the other way that we weren't expecting, they go see a different VSL. So it's like it's 2 different messaging. Mm. And we often are able to see, like, if they go and see this one VSL versus the other, we generate a lot more qualified people from this VSL than the other, right? So it's more logic involved, right? It's a lot of if this, then that type of thing. But the great part about that is then you're only sending people on the journey that gives them exactly what they're looking for, right? It's a lot more technological stuff involved in that, but it also allows you to see this messaging works well with these types of people, this messaging works with this type of, you know, of person, and so on and so forth. So we use all 3 of those, and you'll notice there's always a commonality. There's still a VSL, and there's still an application and a booking, right? The only difference is what's the first step? Are we just going straight to the VSL? Do we give away a lead magnet, or do we have a quiz? And oftentimes we'll rotate this because we're only testing 1-page difference, right? Mm. You can add in a quiz later and then be like, all right, it's a 4-page funnel now. Or excuse me, it's the quiz is the first page, but a couple answers here and there, and then you go to the next one. And so it's not a lot of work if you could figure out how to just organize it, right? That's the main thing.
Yeah, makes sense. So tell me something for those listening right now, they're like, oh man, which one do I do? So for me, I'll give you some background. We have a limited sales team. I'm not interested in having a sales team of 30 people or 20 or even 10 right now. I really just want a few good ones where I'm giving them good leads, qualified leads, and they're, you know, we're creating less issues. I don't want to deal with a lot of nonsense. I don't want Learn to become a sales operation company where we're getting most of our revenue through sales. We used to do that. We had a huge sales team and in-house, radically successful, and I actually got rid of it because it just wasn't what I envisioned. But
a lot of work.
So having said that, you know, we'll have 4, 5, 6 people in the grand scheme of things. But again, we're also, because we're a publishing company, we're going to end up having 4 or 5 programs. So it's like 6 people is not that much at the end of the day if you have 4 or 5 programs. So of the 3, what does your gut say? Which one do you think I go towards?
The second one, the lead magnet one, right? The one that's a lead magnet to a VSL. And mainly because it's already fallen in line with what we know, right? We've seen that funnel over and over and over the years, and it still works. And the reason is because the lead magnet itself will attract a certain type of person. So you could always split test the lead magnet, right? You can give away a copy lead magnet. You can give away an ads lead magnet, you name it. And that'll bring in a different type of person into the funnel. But at the end of the day, the VSL is still going to, you know, explain exactly what it is that you're looking for in terms of the people you want to work with. Right? Yeah. So that's going to filter anyway. But these leads that come in from these different funnels or these different lead magnets will allow you to have different messaging for them. Just like I mentioned with the quiz, you could do the same thing with your email, right? They come in from a copy lead magnet. They'll have specific messaging that gets them to eventually apply versus someone who's coming in because of advertising related information. You might have a different angle for them because they might want more clients, whereas the copy person might just want to go, how do I even start this as a business, right? Sure. There might be a completely different angle there.
And so on the lead magnet, what's a good lead magnet if I don't want to have to spend a ton of time getting it created?
Case studies do really well if you have pre-existing experience in what it is that you do, right? Okay. So like for you or me, I put a lot of case studies together based upon client accounts that I manage, mm-hmm. right? But I do it based upon a specific subject matter, like e-com, how to generate apps, how to get a lot of webinar registrants, right? So it's specific type of case study because once again, someone who sees a webinar specific case study, they might be looking for something e-com based. So I just put out a different case study later. This is e-com, boom, grab their attention. They come in that way, right? So all I'm really doing is rotating what it is that I'm giving away. Now, the reason why case studies do so well, even though it generates a higher cost of a lead, the person who's going through that information is automatically reading through it. They're like, I want this. They're oftentimes consuming a lot of info up front because of the fact that you're just revealing, like, here's the strategy behind it. Here's how I got these results. Here's what I did for this person. Because what they're feeling, it's an emotional thing. They're going, I want this. This is exactly what I want. I want these results too. Hmm. And your VSL is supposed to answer that calling that they're having, which is, I can help you get results like this, right? That's the whole reason why you're reading this case study. Whereas if you did a lead magnet, like, you know, a short report, a 10-page report with a couple strategies in there, it's very possible someone downloads this thing and doesn't use it, right? It just stays on their hard drive and sits there and does nothing. And, you know, they might still go through the process of filling out your application, but they didn't actually consume anything. Like, they didn't go through anything in order to even justify whether or not they want to work with you. Case studies, it seems like the people who go through them, like, they legitimately opt in and go through it. The moment you put your name and email, they go to their email, they check it out, they read through it, they go to the VSL. It's like they're more engaged. And we know this because we've had funnels where we can put heat mapping and see, like, who comes back? How long are they staying? Are they scrolling through the page? Like, we could see the activity level is higher with someone who's consumed a case study than, let's say, a short report.
So, okay. So for example, we'll kind of drive this one a little bit further. I like this. And like I told you before, every rounds plan I make on my episodes is abandoned about 20 minutes into the episode. And we're exactly 20 minutes in, so I'm right on track. The lead magnet, I have, for example, I have one student who I taught copywriting, and he's running almost a $700,000 a year dollar agency now, working about 2 to 3 hours a day. That's awesome. And that's awesome, right? Like, I want to tell that story because he literally is the epitome story, and he just did everything great. We have another one that I currently work with right now is running about, he's doing about $5,000 or $6,000 a month as a copywriter, just freelancing. And again, I taught him, we have a few of these. So first question, let's just say I picked up the first one because it's the biggest number. It's the sexiest story, $700,000 a year agency. My first fear is, doesn't that just automatically break all the ad compliance issues? Like, if I made that the case study, how do I get around that?
So a lot of the ads that we run, we don't necessarily just go off of just the number that was gained from the person. So for example, we'll put on the page, you know, I'll just use a name, how Jeremy was able to build a multiple six-figure business. We don't say the number.
Okay.
Of course, once they opt in and that email comes in, that number is right in the subject line, right? We put it right in their face. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about just on the ad side, right? Mm-hmm. So we might say multiple six figure or a business that's not dependent on him and he only has to work 2-3 hours a day, right? So we can go more off of what he's experiencing, right? More of the less about the money and more about how his life has changed. Mm-hmm. Reason why we do that is not just compliance. We often find that the people who come in just because of money are only thinking about money. And if they don't get a result immediately, they're the biggest headaches in the program. Whereas the ones who want a change in their life, I want to spend more time with my family, go on vacation, maybe not right now, but go on vacation, or I want to work less. You know, I want to have more systemization in my business. I want to be able to just talk to people all day. Those types of things are a byproduct of, you know, the things that you're going to teach them. And you basically can reveal in the case study, like, here's how this person's life has changed. They got their dream house. They got their dream car. They spend more time with their kids, whatever it may be, right? Because now it's not about the money anymore. The money is a byproduct of those changes that they've already made. So we will use both, right? We can have an ad about the money and an ad about how life has changed. And it's the same person. We just make sure if we're mentioning money, we don't say, oh, he made $721,400.98 last year. Mm. You know, we make it as general as possible, over 700,000 or multiple six figures, yeah. You know, and the rest of the copy is more revolved around, you know, the story. This person came in 9 months ago. They were struggling with their business, like the hero's journey. Where were they before working with you? What did they do during, and how did things change after?
Got
right.
It.
So we want to make sure the journey is involved in the ad.
Got it. All right. No, makes sense. So that would be the lead magnet. Okay. So let's say we're doing ads. Let's talk some, so real quick, actually, I do want to go to funnel number one, because it's funny you said funnel two, but funnel number one is the one I've been kind of working on for both of them, only because it's easier enough to do a lead magnet. Yeah. And so any tricks to the trade there? Like, basically with funnel number one, the way we're doing it is It's a VSL, so you land on the page, you watch the video, there's a button, you click it, goes to a thorough application that you have to fill out, that we then, you know, and so of course the video will try to filter you out too, but we know most people don't watch the full video, they go skip to the button, but the button, then there's a longer application. So if you're too lazy to fill it out, they're the wrong person. Any tricks to the trade there that we should be aware of if I'm doing funnel number one?
So funny enough, let's say you don't want to turn that case study into a lead magnet. You can make it a full-fledged ad, right? You could tell the whole story in the ad, maybe even throw in a video ad to go with it. So you can, you know, break it down even further, because then what you're doing is you are, you know, putting all that information you would have given away in, you know, in collecting an email, you're doing it up front, right? And you know that the people who watch those ads all the way through, they're qualifying themselves from the get-go. Yeah. Like, they're automatically intrigued. They know what you're about. When they click, they probably won't watch your VSL at all, but they'll go straight to apply.
Yeah.
Right. And so we often will take that same concept of a case study that we were going to give away and instead turn it into the actual ad. We'll tell the whole story. One of those super long ad copy ads. You know what I'm talking about. It's almost like a, you know, 1,000+ word blog post that you're reading. But the people who go through those are hyper qualified. They're some of the best people that go through the funnel. And so you don't want to do a lead magnet or create a case study report and that type of thing. No problem. You could turn them into individual ads. And we've done that where it's like, we have 5 case studies. We'll make 5 unique ads. Some will be just image based. Maybe if we've ever had a picture with that person, we would use that. Or we would just tell the story through a video as well and show, you know, maybe some screenshots of, you know, where he was at before, where they're at now, that type of thing.
No, that's awesome. All right. Love it. Let's move into round number 2. I want to talk numbers. So round number 2, let's talk what to expect. We'll start with funnel number 1, and I want to go to funnel number 2. So for refreshing everyone's mind, funnel number 1 is straight ad to video to application to call.
Yep.
So in our space, because I'm being selfish to me, we're in the internet marketing space. Both of the campaigns I want to run are in the internet marketing space. What kind of dollar per click types should I be in the range of? And I know it goes all over the map. It's creative driven, personal driven, targeting driven. But I'm like range. Like if someone's paying, you know, way outside the range, they'll know like, oh, something's off. But is there a range per click that you kind of look at?
I mean, not necessarily on the click range, because like you said, it does vary. What we actually will look at though is click-through rate.
Okay.
Because click-through rate gives us a gauge as to whether or not the subject matter we have in the ad is intriguing enough to the audiences we're targeting.
Okay.
Right. So 1 to 2% is enough for us to go, there's some interest in it. Mm-hmm. Above 2%, we're onto something. People are really starting to pay attention. Above 3%, we've really hit the nail on the head, or we've struck a nerve, right?
Okay.
That's by then. And here's the other thing. You can have a high CTR ad of 3% or higher, and you could be pissing off a lot of people. Keep that in mind, right? Because when you're evoking emotion in an ad, that emotion could be positive or negative. And if it just so happens to be fear-based, you can have a very high click-through rate ad that's fear-based. And then at the same time, you look at your engagement, your comments, and it's a lot of people who are angry, right? So just remember, it's a two-way thing here. You don't want to piss off everyone on Facebook or Instagram or anywhere, because it does hurt the health of your account, right? So you want to...
When you say click-through rate, you're talking about the click-through rate of the link, not just overall click on the ad.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. Got it. All right, perfect.
So that's that. But let's say if you want to go for click cost in the internet marketing, make money online, biz op space, a ad that is doing really well, you could probably get 50 to 75 cents a click. If it's something, and we're talking like a hyper clicked type of link, right? Something that's really hitting on the head as to what people are looking for. If you are sort of in like the middle, maybe it's grabbing attention, but maybe not quite in like a viral sense, 75 cents to $1.25 is still okay. Anything beyond $1.25, unless it's generating a lead cost you're happy with, most likely is not something people are interested in.
Got it. Oh, perfect. So now let's talk about people are landing on this video VSL page. How long are the videos usually? If I was your client, I'm making this and you're running funnel number one for me, rough idea?
15 minutes is the lowest we're seeing. Mm-hmm. Longest, 25.
Okay, so 15 to 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. Does the button pop only at a certain time to apply, or is the button there from the get-go
when you land on the page? It's always there.
It's always there, okay.
And there's a lot of conflicting information on that. You know, some people will say hide it until 5 minutes in, you know, and all that good stuff. Honestly, we just leave it there because if someone doesn't want to watch the video, maybe the ad did its job and they just go to the page and they want to go to the application, why stop them from taking that action, right? Yeah. We still have other qualifying things in place so that if, God forbid, they don't watch the video and they're not qualified, well, then we don't have to worry about it, right? The application filtered them out anyway.
Yeah. All right, perfect. So what should be my cost per application range?
Okay, so I'll break down cost per app and cost per call, right? Okay. I think a lot of people will go off cost per app and not realize that it's not the true number, right? We all want to generate phone calls. I'm seeing right now the average, I'm not saying it's the lowest, just the average, we're actually seeing about $100 an app, qualified app, okay? Not total apps. We're getting total apps for less than that. We're seeing some accounts at $50 or $60 an application, but when we're talking about qualified, talking about $100 an app. You can go as high as $150. Once again, it's all dependent on your metrics. When you know your numbers, you can have a little more leeway with the application cost, right? But I always use $100 as a benchmark because then I can always optimize and improve things later, right? So I just want to see $100 or less and I'm good to go from there. $125, I might give it some time to nurture, see if I could bring that down. If it shoots up to $200, I'm not going to run that, right? Mm-hmm. Unless it's generating, you know, if I can work with that number or it's generating calls, then I'm okay with that. But oftentimes $100 an app is what we look for. We're seeing in this space as well that at least 50% of those apps will actually show up to their call. Mm-hmm. At least 50%. It has been higher. Don't get me wrong. A couple months ago, we were seeing like 70, 80% of people show up to their calls. Sort of slowed down a little bit, but that doesn't mean we don't get them on a call later. It's just we're talking immediate within the first week of them applying. Are these people jumping on? At least 50% are. Right.
So now, when they're booking the time, right? Or are you following up with them after the app?
They're booking the times and some of these people just never show up.
Yeah.
And that's when we have an appointment setter that goes back through these applications and people who've booked calls and tries to call them and get them to rebook. Right. Mm-hmm. That way it's not just only hitting them up through email or even text message in hopes that they do it themselves. We want to somehow, I wouldn't use the word force, but it's like we're motivating them to do it again. Right. It's like, hey, we know you missed this thing. We got you on the phone now. Do you want to just go ahead and rebook it and I'll do it for you? Mm-hmm. Right. So that at least helps with that part of the equation where, you know, if only 50% of your apps, 50% of your people who've booked from the apps are showing up, well, then your cost per call is double, right? Mm-hmm. Because now you got to generate more applications to get more calls. But when you got a $7,000 or $9,000 program, you could still pay $200 a call because it might only take you 5 or 6 calls to generate a sale. Benchmarks. You can always improve them and make them lower, or you can adjust them based upon as you start to get some sales. You might say, we could afford a $300 call. We can afford a $400 call.
No, makes perfect sense. Okay. So then you said it's about $200 per call. Mm-hmm. What your top clients, the ones that are running good operations, is it every 5 to 7 call sale, 10 call sale? What's the average you're seeing?
Getting 5 to 7 calls are getting a sale.
Okay.
5 to 7. Best one right now, 3 calls. Right now.
It's epic. I mean, it's an epic ROI, right?
Then it's insane. $6,000 program, real estate space, just boom, 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 all day. It's just constant calls. And every 3 people, they close. And it's because of the filtering in that application. Mm. You know, so yeah, when we had the application a lot broader, we had far less questions, right? We used to have like a 7 question app. This one now is 12, which is way unconventional. Mm. Usually, you know, you try to keep it 10 or less. For some reason, we were like, you know what, let's throw in a couple extra questions because it is real estate. Though it is a biz op in theory, we also have to ask a little more around accredited investors and things like that. So we don't want to just generate a bunch of people who want to do wholesaling where you don't really need money. We need some people with money in this. So we start adding these additional questions in there. And because of the additional filtering, the people we're getting on the phone are people with money to invest, period. It's just whether or not they want to invest in real estate. Right. So now we don't have to worry about whether or not they have the money. Right. So Perfect. That's why it might only take 3 calls to get a new customer because there you're prepared to spend.
Awesome. All right. Love it. Okay. Let's move to funnel number 2. Let's talk numbers there. So lead magnet. I actually think I could do that lead magnet really easily. I was thinking about it while you were talking. I have to do a video interview with that individual anyways for a funnel I'm building for my copywriting program, not the super ticket, but my actual continuity membership. When I do the interview with them, I can just hand that interview off to my copywriters and say, create a, how long do a case study lead magnet, like PDF file should, how long do you usually make them?
I mean, they could be, They could be as short as like 5 pages to as long as like 15. Here's the thing. It's all about how many case studies you want to deliver. Mm-hmm. Right? And like I said, when I want to go multi-angle, I will still have like one angle will talk about an application funnel, but the report that they're going to get, I'll have an application webinar and e-commerce example in that same report. Mm-hmm. That way they could see like, oh, he's not just a one trick pony. He knows multiple things, right? That's my example.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're doing a case study, if you have more than one person who's had similar results, you can throw in a second or third one, makes the report a little more robust, you know, maybe 10, 15 pages. And then when they're going through, it's just reinforcing that you know what you're doing.
Got it. All right. Perfect. Love it. All right. So on that one, we're paying, you know, the first metric we're tracking is cost per lead because they're opting in. So what kind of conversion rate should I be looking for to be happy with on the opt-in page?
Yeah. So let's say your audience is the copywriters, right? Mm-hmm. If we're going after just strictly copywriters, remember the broader the audience, the cheaper the leads are going to be. So the more specific, the cost will be slightly higher. But we also remember I mentioned that case studies, it's almost like having an extra filter on top or a better qualifier because the people who go through a case study oftentimes might just go straight to your application and book. Mm. So a good example, one of my clients targets agencies. That's his thing. He's just targeting ad agencies for, it's a reporting software that they're selling. So it's like, we want to only target agencies. That's a very finite group of people. And Facebook does not make it easy to go after agencies, right? There's nothing that says ad agencies. So in doing so, our copy has to call them out and the leads will vary anywhere between 10 and 20 bucks, but they all have agencies, period. So we're willing to pay that. With copywriters, because it is a much larger group of people who are copywriters, or at least they might identify as freelance writer or something along those lines. That's millions of people. And I know this because I searched it before. Mm. So with that, you should be able to get leads obviously below 10. I would say probably closer to like the 5 to 7 range, mm-hmm. but that's where your filtering is going to have to come in because you and I both know there's a lot of copywriters who say they're copywriters and they haven't written copy in a long time, or it's copywriters who aren't making anything, or they want to be a copywriter and they just have it in their profile, but they've never actually written before. There's a lot of what ifs in that situation. Yeah. And so your filtering has to do the job, but you can get leads. You can get leads for even cheaper than that. If the giveaway that you're giving to these people is something to where it's like, there's a tactic in there that they might be able to use in the case study that you're revealing, right? They might be able to actually download this free thing and use a strategy that was delivered in that report, right? Sure. So that's enough to get them to go, I should at least get this thing, right?
Okay. Yeah. And the more specific leads, I mean, obviously they're worth a lot more, right? It pans out in the back end. So you pay more, but there's better leads long-term for the life of the lead. Okay. Now let's say I got 100 people opted in.
Yep.
Out of those 100, how many do you think would become a app? Because they got to go to the other page, watch a video and now click and then become an application. Qualified app, as you said before.
Rule of thumb in most cases is that your lowest percentage of people who would become a call are 5%. Lowest. Okay. I've seen as high as 15% of those people become calls, right? So we're looking at 5 to 15 of those leads will become applications.
Got it. Okay.
Now if we go a step further, right? Let's say 10 people apply, you might get 5 or 6 of those people to show up to a call, right? That's the thing you got to keep tracking is like, great, 10% are turning to apps. Well, how many of those actually turn into calls? If our call percentage can be above 50%, that's when we're really starting to make things churn in a good way, right? So obviously we have to dial in lead cost and application cost first, but we want to make sure that we're at least getting half of our applicants actually show up to a call.
Do you find that the cost per call or cost per qualified app works out to be kind of the same for funnel 1 and 2?
They're very similar, except sometimes with option 2, you know, with the lead magnet, those leads could be nurtured over time. So we have seen some people apply 3 to 4 weeks later. You know, they've just been going through email after email. And, you know, most people will create a 7 or 14 day follow-up in hopes that within the first 1 or 2 weeks that they actually apply. But people forget that you could just send one email a week thereafter as a value add. And at some point they might just decide to apply with you, right? Or they might go back and reference something that you sent out a week prior. And so we're seeing that there are leads that do come in 3, 4, 8 weeks later. They just weren't prepared to talk to you. Right. Mm-hmm. So at least collecting that lead, you keep them in the ecosystem. Now, even for you, this is just to bring it all around. your ecosystem is very large. You got a lot of offers. Someone could fall out of that 30-day ecosystem of an application funnel and you could send them in a different direction, right? You could say, you know what? Maybe they're not that interested in this, you know, this copy offer. Maybe I should send them to affiliate marketing. Maybe I should send them to advertising, maybe Kindle, whatever. You just send them in another direction because it's clear that this wasn't enough to get them to take an action in the first 2 weeks,
yeah.
Right? So that's why a lot of people like collecting the leads.
Makes perfect sense. All right. So then the cost per call works out to be roughly the same, but there's the added benefit. I totally get it. With Funnel 2, lead building, I'm the email guy. I always talk about how important it is to build email leads or email lists because there's always a value to them long term. Okay, let's move into round number three. I want to talk a little bit about the ad side now. I want to talk more about ads. So round number three, Facebook, YouTube, go. What's your take? There's a whole battle out there right now. People are Facebook people, people are YouTube people. For this type of funnel where you're trying to generate leads for, is there a particular favorite?
So funny enough, even though I'm known as like the Facebook guy to a lot of people, I do test quite a bit of YouTube, right? So I don't want anyone to think I'm just so impartial that I'm never going to touch YouTube ads. Now, what I would say is this, if we're doing the lead magnet funnel, the YouTube side could actually take more time to optimize than the Facebook side. We can get the Facebook funnel to, or the Facebook ads to convert a lot faster when we have a lead magnet in place in order to get them through the process of, you know, becoming an application than a phone call. With YouTube, what we find is that the ads that we're using there, it could be the exact same video, but the audience just does things a little differently, right? They might have to watch 3 or 4 videos from your channel before they take an action of clicking your link, right? Because your frequency on Facebook, on YouTube, I could see your ad every time I go and watch someone else's video. Every single time, your pre-roll ad could be the same ad every time. So it might take me 5, 6 times seeing your face before I even click it. And then I might see it 2, 3 times, watch 20 seconds in, and finally decide to go click through, right? So I'm already being charged for all this before you even click through. And then I got to be able to see if you actually go through the process of opting in and become an application. What I find though is this, the YouTube lead seemed to be a lot less of a headache if they join the program. Here's what I mean by that. Because we are tracking based on who joins from the list. They're very passionate people. When they watch your stuff, they watch a lot of it, right? They see an ad that they like, they'll watch it, they'll go to your channel. You know, maybe they save it for later to watch. The point is that they're a massive consumer of your stuff. So what ends up happening is that when they get on an application and then, you know, a call, if you ask them like, hey, you know, what maybe, you know, got you to jump on this call, they'll say, I watched 15 of your videos. I listened to you on a podcast. I then went to your Facebook and followed you. Like they do a bunch of stuff before they ever even get on the call. These are also people who are a lot less inclined to say no, because they get to know you first. They've spent all this time doing research on you. And so these people, I consider them hyper passionate because they already know what they want by the time they get to the call. They understand your message. They understand what you're offering. And they don't mind if you start off the call just saying like, you know, how could I help you achieve the result that you're looking for? They talk about what they want. And you're like, all right, well, this is how much it is. Like those calls are a lot shorter.
They're content consumers, right? Because if you're on YouTube, why did you go to YouTube to begin with? You're consuming some form of information.
Sometimes
so probably just more information driven.
Yeah, exactly. And Facebook people are just like quick. Every, you know, videos are 3 minutes long. They blast through them constantly or even a minute long. So it's a short term, you know, sort of like stimulus. It's like go, 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 go. And so when they are showing a VSL, not many of these people are going to watch it the first time around. You might have to send them back to that VSL page 3, 4, 5 times for them to watch that 15 or 20 minute video. Some of them may never make it past minute 5 and they just go and apply. YouTube people watch 15 minute videos back to back to back to back. They're not having a problem with that because they're used to doing it. They're okay with that. They'll watch a streamer go for an hour and a half. They will watch, you know, one of my favorite YouTubers, Graham Stephan. I'll watch a 20 minute video of his and then watch another one. And that one's 15 minutes long. And I don't even hesitate. I just watch it. Even with the ads, you know, it's just like, all right, whatever, skip, next, keep going. Because that's the type of content he creates. So if you were creating that mentality with your YouTube audience, right, because they're going to start to see your stuff more often, then naturally, what's going to happen when you put some ads out and change up the messaging. They're going to get used to it and they'll eventually get through. And those calls are quite easy to close, in my opinion. I love you. Yeah.
So, but generally speaking, Facebook, you know, like right now I come to you and I'm like, oh, here we go. Here's a budget. Yeah. You know, David, time to get me 20 leads a day for my copywriting program. Where's you're going to first pull the gun on Facebook?
I mean, that's my strong suit, right? Okay. So I'm going to be like, hey, let me do my thing on Facebook first. And then once I dial that in, we'll move to YouTube. Now, don't get me wrong. We want to have all the pieces in place for YouTube, even if we're not running the ads. I want to have the tracking. I want to make sure we're grabbing the audiences so I can retarget. If you have a nurtured AdWords account that's already spent money and we're allowed to create relevant audiences, by the way, you got to spend $50,000 in an account before you can get those. If you've already been doing that, you're sitting on a gold mine. So all I have to do is just prepare it to start spending, right? Just creating the audiences, making sure the tracking is in place. Maybe I can get some campaigns built out, not launched, but just they're built, right? So I'm creating the infrastructure before ever launching it. But I want to get Facebook and Instagram figured out because that's what I am most known for. It's what I've built. I have more time logged in on Facebook than YouTube when it comes to ads. So let me get that figured out first.
Yeah.
But then, you know, once that's running and we have traffic consistently coming in, turn on YouTube and then we can get that party started.
Love it. All right. Let's move into round four. It's the one I've been waiting for. So round number four, let's actually do ads, targeting, all that fun stuff. So I'm going to, let's do it through an example. So round number four, ads and targeting for my copywriting incubator program. So again, I'll draw the image. I come to you. Here we go. I've got, we'll say I've got funnel number one, okay, just for simplicity since I almost have that ready to go. Mm-hmm. And it's a VSL that says I'm looking for 30 or 20, you know, students to mentees to turn into freelance copywriters. I'm looking for 20 people that like writing. So with me, what do you do? What does the ads look like? Are they image ads, video ads? What kind of targeting do you go after? How do you attack it?
So this is going to sound like a broken record because a lot of advertisers will say this, but you got to test both image and video. And I say that because, and you know this, some people's personalities on video are just, they're so attractive that no matter what they put out there, you're just like, I'm going to listen to this person. Mm-hmm. And then there's others, they're on video and you're like, get away from me. Right? It depends on the person, right? I love doing video. To me, my personality is bubbly enough to not cause a problem, but it's also not too masculine to make people go, oh, I don't want to talk to this guy. It's like right in the middle enough for people to pay attention. Mm-hmm. But then we also know there's plenty of polarizing individuals who create content too. So you got to know who it is that's you're targeting. And then also, you know, whether or not the messaging you're putting out there and the tonality of it is going to push people away or pull them in. Right? Mm-hmm. So I always like to do both. Because if I'm creating content video-wise and I see that no one's clicking or the engagement is just people saying, you know, this is a scam, I don't believe this guy, but, you know, that type of thing, I'm probably not going to create videos anymore because clearly I'm pissing off people and I don't want to, right? Mm-hmm. So then I'll roll with images from there. But oftentimes we will do video. I mean, it could be something like this. It could be in front of a whiteboard. I mean, when you're at the Learn Center, right, you could be anywhere in the Learn Center. Right. So it's just what's more comfortable for you, and you don't have to make it overproduced. That's another thing. I have found that sometimes just doing this is enough. Mm-hmm. Something that looks so real and the fact that it looks like you did it in real time oftentimes performs better than something that's overly produced. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. Now, with the images, if you are a professional like us, like where we've spoken on stages and we've done webinars and things like that, funny enough, a lot of the best performing ads I've run lately are ones on stages because no one's speaking on stages right now. So when they show something of you being on stage, they're like, what's going on there? It actually stops people because they're like, wait, where's their events going on right now? It has nothing to do with events. It's just the fact that you're on a stage. Mm-hmm. But it's an authority piece too, right? You might be dressed up, speaking in front of 300-400 people, 200 people, whatever it may be. That just presents the fact that people are paying you to listen to you, right? So it just establishes that authority from the get-go. Now, if you have other images, I mean, pictures with family, pictures of you with students, or when you're at major events and it's like a group of people, I do all sorts of mixtures of images, but it's always with other people because I often find that it's an association thing. It mentally, they can go, oh, he works with a lot of people, or people are paying him money to go speak in front of a large group, or he holds events and there's 10 people in the room. Like it's an association thing. That's what I like to do, is just throw in pictures with others in it. Mm-hmm. If you're telling a story around a client, that, you know, if you're doing a case study style ad and you have a picture with that client, it's the easiest connection right there. It's an automatic to do that type of image, right? Yeah. So that just gives you an idea of like the type of split testing you can do with imagery versus video. But when it comes to targeting, in your case, because it's copywriters, everyone thinks that just going after copywriters as a job title or employment is the low-hanging fruit. And funny enough, a lot of copywriters have been bombarded with copywriting offers. So, of course, they are the low-hanging fruit. You will get people from doing that. But let's think a little outside the box here. There are plenty of people who identify as the freelance writer that you could target. You could just type in freelance, just a generic term, and say, you know, would you ever consider, you know, making money writing, as an example. Well, there's a lot of freelancers who are like, I'm just doing odd jobs. I want to do something that's consistent. You can use an angle as, you know, becoming a copywriter is a very consistent freelance opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So you could see how you could tie that in. And that's a very generic term. So that's 15, 20 million people just off that term. Now, if you want to go even more into that, think about the people who are a part of like the creative writing community. There's a lot of people who are ghostwriters who actually don't realize they would be great copywriters too, right? They're ghostwriters of books and ghostwriters of blog content and things like that. So you would be able to type in things like, there's a term for, I think it's in November. It's a type of like writing month. It's like a literature writing month, and it actually comes up as a term. So you look for like literary writers, ghostwriter, blog writer, things like that. People who just identify as everything other than a copywriter, because a lot of these people think that it's, you know, because of the term copywriter to them is something completely different, they just don't pay attention to it. If you present it as an angle where it's like, you already do writing, you understand structure and how to get people to read, have you ever considered turning this into an actual profession? Right? You can see where you can tie it all in. Those terms, it's always tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. When you bundle them together, you're talking, you know, 1 to 2 million creative types, you know, people who are probably writing for food blogs and their own blog, and they do like, you know, poems and things of that nature, who never would have thought of being a copywriter, but they already write all the time. Yeah. They just may not make the money that they want to make. They probably do it as a side hustle, you know, making $1,000 a month writing for a food blog when they could be making 10K a month writing copy like they do in these magazines or in these blogs for other people, right? So
to me, it sounds like go wider, and then you really, it feels to me like your ads, you have more of a conversation in the ad. Mm-hmm. So you're doing more in the ads than just building up hype and saying, click here. It's almost like, you know, like I like how you said, have you ever considered?
Yeah.
You know, so like if you're if I'm targeting freelance writer, which I actually know is a targeting, I've seen it before. In the type of ad that you're talking about, I would write, you know, freelance writers, have you ever considered, you know, something called copywriting, which there are currently over 26,000, you know, job openings for, or something like that.
Yep.
And so it's almost like you're creating a very conversation where you're addressing who they are and then kind of bringing them in. And I can so totally see how that would work. I'm wondering, like, because we don't do that. I don't do that strategy. Like right now with one of our best programs that we're promoting, which is my email marketing program, it's a little bit more of the get this book for absolutely free and how to make money with your email address. But I'm wondering, do most of your ads, do you go with this like conversational tone? Like even with a biz op, is that something that we should be considering more of, have you considered type of verbiage?
Yeah. And maybe it's not written in that specific way, but I definitely try to create that conversation type connection in my ads, because I want them to have an association to me before they ever consume or buy something of mine. Right. So it's like, I want to build off of a, you know, emotion I may be evoking from them, where it's like, have you ever considered becoming a copywriter? And I'm like, they start questioning it. I don't know, maybe. And then the ad will do the rest of having them question more things about themselves. Mm. Did you know, right? Whenever you throw in facts into an ad as well, it's like, did you know there are 26,000 people? Da, da, da. When you throw in facts like that, it also makes them think, right? So it's almost like I'm having a conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. In doing that, it also keeps negativity out of my ad, because it looks like I'm conversing with you, trying to help you, versus the more direct response way of like, get my stuff. It's awesome. People get results all the time. Buy my thing, right? It's too in your face. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've seen it. The more aggressive you are with that, the more you got to manage your comment section and the amount of people dropping some BS in there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because it's coming off a little too harsh to them. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it doesn't work. I just write in a more conversational manner. That's the way that I do things. It works longer term. My ads work a lot longer than most people. I'm sure you've heard how, oh, you got to rotate your ads every week, or you got to rotate them every couple weeks because they die off and there's ad fatigue. I have ads that have been running for over a year. That's mm-hmm. not even possible anymore, according to a lot of people. And it's because I'm writing it where it's I'm having a conversation. And once you've had that conversation, meaning you've booked a call, you're excluded. You don't see that anymore. So that conversation's done. But we at least keep that going with other people. And we write multiple conversation pieces, right? The one for the freelance writer, the copywriter, who maybe is not doing as well as they want to, you know, the blog writer, the literary writer, whatever it is, there's different conversation pieces for each one of them.
Yeah, no, makes perfect sense. Wow. Listen, we're coming to the top of the hour here. So it's been really powerful. I have a question about working with you. It came to me early on too, when I was doing your intro, when we were talking, as I'm really impressed. And I feel like a lot of people should just consider bringing their ad business to you because of the wealth of knowledge and just, you know, your experience. But with that many clients, when someone comes to you, how does it work? Do they actually get David? Do you have a team of account managers? I know you're smiling because you probably get this all the time.
Yeah. It's a hybrid. So here's what I mean by that. You do get me in that initial conversation, because if I can understand your business model, it's very easy for me to explain it to my team, right? I have a team of seven. We manage, right now we have, you know, 23 clients under management at this very moment. At one point, at our peak, we had 53, okay? Now, not trying to kill everybody on my team here. We realize that very quickly, it's a lot, but yeah, we're managing a lot of spend. And there's a lot of systems in place in that where we can manage less people and still have more spend and everything still flows. We can take on more clients because we build these systems into people's accounts, not automated where it's all hands off, but we understand when things need to be split tested, when they need to be scaled, when we need to incorporate more creative things like that. So it makes it easy for everyone to be on the same page. But you get to talk to me when it comes to tell me about your business, your ad budget, what you want to create, things of that nature. And then my team and I work on your ads together. Sometimes I'm jumping in accounts and creating things and telling my team don't touch it, because I could see what's going on before they do, right? That's 13 years of doing this versus 3 or 4, right? Even my best ad manager's only done it for 4 years, right? Yeah. So, and that's just me being over their shoulder all that time. Now, at the same time, they have all my methodology. So when I say something like, hey, it's a webinar campaign, you need to scale this, they know exactly what to do. I don't have to say anything else. They know exactly what has to get done, so I don't have to be over their shoulder repeating things over and over. So you get this all-encompassing, you know, strategy and tactical information from a team, and I'm relaying it to you like, hey, this is what we did. I don't ever want people to think it's just me hovering over accounts all day, just, you know, doing my thing. Don't get me wrong. I often jump in a lot of these accounts and create structures, and then my team will take over and go, oh, I know what you're doing here. I know where to scale this thing, right? So it's a lot of team effort in this.
I love it, man. Listen, how can someone reach you, follow you, track you, stalk you, get a hold of you, show up at your house?
No, I mean, I don't want that part.
how can people get a hold of you, man?
Yeah, the house off limits, but everything else is cool. Facebook, you could find me, facebook.com/Schlossy, S-C-H-L-O-S-S-Y. That's my nickname since seventh grade, so that's how you can find me. I have the blue check in case anyone's curious. And then also on Instagram, David M. Schloss, also blue check. I don't know how that happened, but that one came in recent. And then if you want to email me direct because you actually want to work with me, that's the thing. Don't ask me questions about my ad campaign's not working. No. You want to work with me. It's david@convertroi.com. If you email me there, go straight to me, not my VA, not my assistant. No. Me comes to me. And as long as you want to talk about taking over an account, maybe you want some consulting, maybe you have an issue with things going on in your account and you just need like a one-on-one time, cool. Let's make something happen. Give me some context and then I'll get back to you.
That's awesome, man. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking a part in our awesome podcast and for all the great content you gave me. I'm pretty sure there's money coming from me over to you here very soon as we get these campaigns up and running. And I think that everyone listening should give you some money too. That's my personal opinion. Everybody go follow David. I know I do. And as I told you, there's very few people in this industry that I do follow. So make sure you're following him and learning from him. And don't email the guy unless you want to work with him. I appreciate that too. And that's, you know, I appreciate the fact that you said that, David. A lot of people should say that up front, and that's nothing wrong with that. Listen, guys, leave him a comment below. If you're on YouTube, click subscribe, click the bell icon, click the like icon, click everything. Just click around, okay? Click stuff, because when you click stuff, it makes YouTube and Facebook think you like us, and then they show you more of us, all right? So make sure you subscribe, leave him a comment. He seriously spent time away from his family, away from his baby, away from his business, away from everything to be here and share with us. So it's really powerful. Make sure you thank him for that. And again, remember, go to onicpodcast.com, binge watch all the other episodes we've had. Make sure you leave us a great review at iTunes. I check every week, and I give away lots of really cool prizes. This is Onyx Singhal. As always, when life pushes you, stand straight, smile, and push it the heck back. And I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Fighting Entrepreneur with your host, Onyx Singhal.